Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If. Only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This episode is made possible by the support we get from Fort Collins Kia. If you are in the market for any electric Kia, not only do they never add market adjustments, they will deliver your car to you anywhere in the 48 contiguous states for out-of-spec viewers. More information in the link in the show notes. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Out of Spec Podcast. I'm your host, Francie, and today I'm joined by my team members, and we're going to give you a bit of a wrap-up of what we've been doing in April of 2024. We've got Max, Kyle, Andrew, and Jordan from the team, and it's been a pretty exciting month for us. We've had a lot of content come out, and the industry has seen a lot of news too. We've had some new releases, and we've seen some unfortunate headlines for certain automakers like Fisker. We saw more V to home products from GM, and we of course have seen major layoffs from Tesla, which has shaken up what we're thinking about the industry. We addressed this in another podcast in depth, which I will link in the show notes, but of course we'll comment on that later today as well. But first, I want to pass it off to Jordan, because you have been on the road or in the air a lot this past month, doing a lot of things. So can you update our audience on what you've been so busy with, Jordan?
I'm trying to remember. sometimes I have to go through the video history to see what we've actually been doing. But I've been testing some, you know, small cars in back in Colorado, Fiat 500e notably, and Max helped with a comparison of the 500e versus the Mini, and I think we disagree, which is great. I think me and Max disagree on a lot of things except for food and drink. But the Fiat was, I don't know, I probably have a little bit of a bias because I had one before, not the E, I just had a Fiat, and it just feels like a lot of personality in a car. And it, Kyle's technical term, a little bit of a shitbox, but that, I don't know, I don't hold that against it too much. It is too expensive for what it is. If it was like, you know, $20,000+, I'd be like, oh, it's like Mirage price, but 10 times better. So I can't discredit that too much, but Fiat's been fun. And then, yeah, been out in California for about a week now with the Cybertruck. Well, Kyle road tripped it out, absolutely hauled, hitting EA, blasting over the normal Tesla charging curve with actual EA full power charging, which was pretty awesome. And then me and Kyle had a little canyon day with not EVs, and that was special. Maybe not, you know, our audience probably doesn't care as much as we do, but Cayman and Amira is just, that was a very fun day and very fun cars. And it was like a celebration of like, goodbye manual mid-engine raw sports cars. They'll be around for a bit, but that was super cool. But yeah, just been doing some stuff with Motor Trend, and then should be seeing Matt Farah with Smoking Tire, maybe Paul and Todd with Everyday Driver. Just kind of Kyle was really generous to offer a truck with some people, and it's just like it's great to just like do it all at the same time and kind of get it out of the way, and then have our truck back for our own stuff And I'm hopefully going to get the recall taken care of soon if Tesla doesn't keep rescheduling it to random days. Because, yeah, we're still rocking the normal accelerator pedal, which is fine. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was like two confirmed cases of the pedal cover flying off. And so to Tesla's credit, they're trying
actually
to get
actually more because it happened to our friend Sergio on his truck. Yeah. So yeah, just always keep in mind. I always, like, every time I was in the canyons wide open coming out of a corner, I would always just pull back on my foot a little bit. It's just like always in the back of my head.
Yeah. So hopefully Tesla gets the floor mounted accelerator pedal sorted. And I'm glad they're getting ahead of it, sort of. But it does look like a kind of ugly fix, especially if they don't get that rivet centered. So hopefully they do. But I'll be documenting that for sure. And I also got a little video clip I got to put on Twitter of the truck crossing over the 10,000 mile mark last night in Laguna Beach. So seeing some friends at Rivian, hopefully doing a tour of the Laguna Beach Rivian Theater. It's this incredible building, notably where they unveiled the R2 and the R3 and the R3X. And then they completely transformed it. Like, I almost didn't recognize the inside because of how they changed it after the unveiling. So pretty wild. Saturday is Star Wars Day, and they're doing a showing of Star Wars Rogue One in the theater, inviting everyone for free popcorn. It's pretty epic. So we'll see. And more stuff upcoming. Going to film an electric boat. So I think eventually maybe out of spec boatering should be a thing, because Kyle recently touched the, and I'll let him talk about it, the Porsche boat, which is just so cool. Macan EV and the Porsche boat, it's kind of a two vehicle solution. I don't know. What am I missing, Kyle? I feel like there's a lot of random things in the past.
Yeah, I was just going back through the calendar. You had also been to BMW for the Neue Klasse X. Is that how you say it?
Right.
Yeah.
That was interesting. It was at the Peterson, which is really cool. But it was... yeah, you know, very concept-y, but maybe slightly less concept than I thought, but still pretty concept-y.
Yeah, I remember I was at the BMW tech anniversary, like their 25th anniversary of their tech office, when they first unveiled Neue Klasse, and it was, I mean, very, very concept-y. They had one, so I wonder how they've advanced the concept since then, but sounds like it was still pretty... an idea.
A lot of advance. I do think that the exterior feels like it could be close. The interior, I hope they pay a lot of proper homage to the concept interior, but I did go to the actual BMW Design Center in Santa Monica, and they showed us, you know, where the magic happens, where, you know, the X5 was born here in California, like designed ground up here in California. They talked about their three design centers in Santa Monica, of course, Munich, Germany, and also the one in Shanghai. And between those three, that's where literally every BMW is conceptualized. And they talked about how they actually use AI to help design certain aspects of the car. They don't just throw it into AI and say, give us a car. They're like, okay, we have to design the dash. Let's think about materials, materials, texture, colors. They use AI to help support that. So pretty interesting. Yeah. I thought it was a pretty unique car, I guess, but I don't know. It's got the grill now as like a lighting element. Like, I don't know. It's smaller than the iX, which is what a lot of people want. Like, no one wants the big grill, it seems, and they're kind of learning that. So this is paying homage to the Neue Klasse grill from the '60s, the original Neue Klasse, or I guess the last Neue Klasse. Maybe every 50 years they'll do like a new one. So we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see. To bring it back to kind of your first point is the Fiat 500e. I was in France, of course, like I've mentioned a lot, but for 2 weeks, and we had one brief episode where I kind of listed all the different EVs and hybrids that I was seeing, and the list is really long. I mean, unless y'all think that would be interested, I won't really go through it, but we did see a lot of Fiat 500es, and my mom was hooked. So she thinks, hello, we have another guest on the show.
Hey, Forrest.
Yeah, and Forrest was at the Neue Klasse thing too, so he saw the BMW weird looking thing.
It kind of reminded me of the Kia concepts that we've seen at auto shows with like the alien seats and stuff. But Anywho, yeah, the Fiat 500e is, my mom has, you know, she was buying cars to tow horse trailers, and now she's like, I don't really need to do that anymore. They'll just completely downsize, but we'll see about that. Okay, so as Jordan mentioned, Kyle, you had a bit of a stint in an electric boat, and this isn't something that we've talked about much, that Benny have talked about much, although I do know that boats use solar, they use big batteries. This isn't entirely new, although they're typically like quote unquote hybrid. You know, they usually have engines as well that run on diesel fuel. So the electric boating space, are we seeing stuff that we think will really be adopted widespread?
No. Jordan, are you leaving now? So I think
I can hang out for a few minutes. Yeah.
Okay.
Forrest is going to drive. So
I'm curious to see what you're going to see. Ark. Is that the boat that you're going to check out?
Yep.
Are they real? Do they produce a boat?
Yeah, they sold out of their Arc 1, which was, in their words, it's like their Tesla Roadster. Like,
okay, well, when you say sold out, is that one or three?
I don't know how many. I think 100 or so.
Wow, they built 100 electric boats, and we've never really seen one.
I don't know why it's doing, yeah.
We're not on the water much.
That's true.
I mean, yeah, I don't live in the boat world, but now I'm very curious. I'm nautically curious, so I'm excited to check it out. And because this is they're basically unveiling their next real model. I mean, it's already unveiled, but this is like the first drive event for the press.
Okay, well, that's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that video. Yeah. So I was on the Frauger with Porsche collaboration boat, which is, how much is an Arc, Jordan?
250,000, something like that.
Pennies. The one I was on was $600,000+. And it uses an entirely complete Macan EV powertrain, which is pretty nice, actually, because you get all the like hardcore automotive engineering durability testing. You throw that in a boat and it just works. It was really, really cool. But yeah, the boat was interesting. So I just went through kind of what we did this month from my side. And it all started on Instagram when I had my Cybertruck filling up at the fueling station with the diesel generator. So this was right after we were getting close to the end of truck testing. And mm-hmm. So the beginning of April, we were coming off the you know, truck comparisons, everything like that was happening. I think we did a couple, maybe the off-roading stuff, whatever was at the beginning of April, doesn't really matter. But the first thing I did in April was road trip, 2,000 miles round trip in the Model S to Normal, Illinois to see the R2 and R3 and R3X. So it was a big Rivian trip.
And the EDV. And
yeah, that's right. And I had the EDV for a day, which was really cool. That's their van. And so I was able to drive that around Normal, and we made videos with all of that. It was pretty dang cool. The next thing we did was, actually Max was there for it as well. We shot a bunch of hogbacks sometime in the end of first week of April back here in Colorado. A bunch of driver assistance testing. We did I-5, EV9, both Polestars. I think those videos are actually unlisted. We have to set them live. At some point, the next day, I flew to California to do Ioniq 5N, which is a really cool car. And we're losing Jordan, so we may as well just kick him out because he has no signal. See you, Jordan. Thanks for joining. Goodbye. So Ioniq 5N was really cool. We did a whole track day at Laguna Seca, which was really nice. Love that track.
Yeah, and I know you were really excited about this EV, Kyle. Did it live up to your excitement, your hopes?
Yes, absolutely. Dreams? Yeah, it's hardcore. They weren't messing around with this thing. So it's really cool. When you see one on the road, it's like, no question, an enthusiast who also likes electric went out of their way to buy that thing, which I think is kind of cool. The question is, how big of a market is there for enthusiast electric vehicles? At least from a viewership standpoint, certainly less than the general consumer ones, which you would expect this to be a small percentage of market volume, but we'll see. For example, Jordan did Taycan Turbo GT in Spain, and that may have been one of the worst performing videos we've ever posted on Out of Spec in years. Just no one cared. The car is incredible. I care so much about it. It's insane what it can do. And it could just be maybe the algorithm hated us that day, but yeah, it was just sad. No one watched that video. So that was a little bit disappointing.
That is disappointing, but I see that it doesn't, yeah, like you're saying, it doesn't have a huge market. So unless you're an enthusiast in figuring out how this EV works and how it drives just for fun, but probably most people will never encounter this EV.
I mean, EVs are already such a subset of the entire car market. And then you go within a subset, and it's limited. I am one of the very few people who really loves that performance EV category. But I don't know. I feel like there's maybe like a couple hundred people in our audience that really are like me. And then the rest are just like, watch the miles per kilowatt hour of everything else. And I'm like, God damn it. Yeah. But it's okay. Oh, yeah. I certainly am not complaining about that. I went to France like the day after the IONIQ 5 thing to do the Macan EV drive and the boat and the Porsche charging trailer, which was insane. They have basically this trailer, which is 2.1 megawatt hours with 10 dispensers. And they have 7 of these, by the way. Wow. They built them all back in 2019. They're old. I've seen them at events and stuff. I've just never had the chance to film them. So my friend Kevin Geek, who's responsible for the Taycan program, commissioned these back in probably 2017. So think about the forethought on that. And they can go and they can do events anywhere. They bring all the power with them. It's amazing. They brought 2 of them for the Macan EV launch, and they had 20 cars, and they had dedicated 320 kilowatt dispensing power for each of the cars whenever they needed, which was cool.
That's better than blocking off a bunch of Electrify America stations that are public, right?
Better than that, absolutely, yes.
which they did in LA. Before on press drives, yes, that's why I'm mentioning it. Yeah. This is a bit more catered to the experience.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's really no way for them to ship them to the US. I'd love to have one here, but it's just, we'll have to build one here or something, dismantle one.
Put it on an electric boat and send it over.
I mean, it'll run out of juice.
Not if you're towing that thing. You've got all the battery in the world.
Yeah.
Right. Well, 2.1 megawatt hours will probably get you out of in a boat. That might get you like 1/100th of the way over.
That's
here.
That's why we need hybrid boats, sails too.
Right. Yeah. Put some sails up.
there you go.
After I got back from France, I don't really know what I did, but then I went on a road trip in the Cybertruck 1,000 miles, which we have already road trip Cybertruck a bunch, but this was the first time I wasn't like racing anyone. So, or had crazy weather to battle against. It was just a normal cruise to Los Angeles, which we do often. And it was easy. No major problems, but some bugs and issues here or there with superchargers. Ended up using a couple Electrify America charging sites, hashtag not sponsored ever, but they did work better than superchargers, actually, much faster, and had no major issues with EA on that trip. So that was great. Then I was doing a lot of combustion stuff in LA. I did Lotus Emira. We did Cayman. Jordan talked about those. We did Cybertruck in the Canyons, was interesting. Motor Trend had been using our Cybertruck for the last week, which has been interesting to see what they were doing with it. I went to the G-Class unveil for the Electric G. So that was really more of a rap concert than actually an unveiling of the car. But I have a video that may not be up by the time this podcast goes up, but I just have to edit it. It's a shot of video with the new Electric G.
A rap concert, you say?
Yeah, it was like in Hollywood, Beverly Hills, like in the mountains. And it was a really small event. There may have only been 150 people there or something like that. I was lucky, you know, we were lucky enough to get an invite to it. But what was interesting was it was like The Weeknd was there, Sierra, all of these stars who I'm not even like sure who they are. I was just like, I don't give a crap about any of this. And then, you know, the lights come on. They put lasers all in this freaking mountain range. It was crazy. It was like the craziest display I've ever been in. They basically bought out like a nature preserve and turned it into a concert venue. And then Travis Scott rolls out on a G-Wagon and performs his full concert on the roof of an Electric G, which was crazy. And, you know, everyone's watching him and I'm like in the car hitting buttons. No one even has looked at the G-Wagon. Not even a single person mentioned the word Electric G. It was never said. There was no announcement. Thanks for joining for the Mercedes Electric G launch. Here's Travis Scott. It was just rap concert and then everyone left.
Interesting.
They know their target audience.
I guess so. I mean, really cool that you saw Sierra. I love her. Fun. Okay, so interesting approach. Just a giant party.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole article about everyone who attended, and I'm like, wow, I've heard of all of these people, but I have no idea what they look like or whatever. But everyone was pretty chill. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, I'm sure you were moving and grooving. You haven't mentioned the Tesla Model 3 performance.
Oh, yeah, but I was going to say there were 5 Rolls-Royce Spectres in the parking lot of the Electric G unveil.
Nice.
Which was awesome.
Fitting right in.
Yeah. Yep, then I saw the new Model 3 performance. I've not driven it yet, but went over, checked it out, thought it looked good, did a video on it that did okay. Mm-hmm. What I thought was interesting was there's really no great video out there on that car yet. So we really need to get one and do all the nerd stuff with it. So yeah, that's kind of a disappointment. I mean, we've been talking to the Tesla media team quite a bit on some things. And so like they exist and I'm like, hey, rather than talking to me about Cybertruck stuff, can I review the new Model 3 performance? And then they just don't respond.
an answer.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Brandon's going to get his new 3 performance within maybe a week at the soonest, according to his Tesla app. And then I was like, we are going to steal that. Like, you stole our Cybertruck. And thanks very much. All the videos will come on that car.
Tesla Flex. That's Tesla who you're referring to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then I drove the Acura ZDX. What day does this video go live?
Tomorrow.
Which is Wednesday?
Yes, May 1st.
Should I check to see when the embargo lifts for the Acura ZDX?
You might should. That might be important.
Oh, May 2nd. Bummer. Okay. Anyway, drove the ZDX. Can't tell you how it drove, but I can tell you everything else about it, which is it's a General Motors developed product for Acura with Acura. Basically the way it worked was Acura went to General Motors and said, here are the attributes we want our car to have. We want air suspension. We want, you know, big wheels, big brakes, and we'll design the styling, but you guys build the car. And along with that embargo is a whole podcast I shot there with the chief engineer from the Acura side, talking about the partnership. And from a high level, the partnership was basically like Acura went to GM and then just picked things off a menu and said, let us know when it's done. Thanks so much. Hmm. And I thought that was really interesting coming from the Acura, you know, chief engineer, John Wong, about who's a viewer, by the way. So, hey, John, if you're listening. And, you know, he was really transparent about that whole process of the Prologue and the ZDX and how, honestly, GM engineers deserve a lot of the credit for those cars, not necessarily the Honda Acura engineers. So that was
a catalog pick.
Yeah, it's a weird automotive thing. I mean, it's not uncommon to find cross collaborations between brands. You can look at Subaru BRZ and GT86, or you could look at Supra and Z4. You know, like these things exist out there. This is just like Acura had no involvement and they didn't even do like durability testing. That was all GM. They just like everything was GM, which isn't necessarily bad, but it, you know, I think would have been better if Acura did everything on their end. Okay. What did I do after that? I drove a Moke Electric, which is this bright pink thing.
A Moke.
Yes. And that's so this cute. Is a company that's making like resort vehicles and island vehicles that are electric, and they're $30,000 and they go 30 miles an hour.
Island.
And I'm like,
private island
vehicles. You could buy 10 used Nissan Leafs and chop the roof off of them and have a way higher quality product. So I was actually really disappointed with the price and the product and didn't like it at all, which normally I like weird, quirky things, but this one made me angry.
Yeah, love like the Twizy and the Ami? How is that different from the?
Yeah, this is like a golf cart drivetrain, Max. It felt terrible in comparison.
But so is an Ami or a Twizy.
But they're tuned well and they're nice and they're high quality. But
aren't they also expensive?
Not like this, no. I think a new Ami is 8,000 or 10,000 euros, something like that. I think this is priced more than a base Model 3 with tax credits. So that was pretty lame. And anyway, that's just a, I have to like research everything final for the full video, but I was just so disappointed in that. And then I got back home and I drove my Rivian. Colton detailed it up and I went, did some supercharging tests with it last night. And I just love my Rivian. It's just almost the perfect vehicle. So great. So that's been my month. Oh yeah. GR86. Sorry for getting that wrong. Thanks, Max. Shows you how out of the combustion car world I am.
You're all electric. And yeah, okay, that's a pretty good rundown. I admit I did not drive many cars this month, but there was a day when I took a train, a plane, and an automobile in one day. So wow. That's pretty cool.
No boat?
But I know. We just needed a boat to finish it off. Too bad. Y'all were having all the boat fun. But I'd love to hear what Andrew, if you've had a favorite POV motoring drive this past month in April.
I mean, I've had some interesting ones as we've already kind of discussed. The 500E, super quirky car, not lacking in character at all. Might be lacking. It's definitely a style over function type of vehicle. It sings to you, which is both inside and outside the car. Whenever you turn it on and turn it off, it sings. And then when you start getting into motion, it sings outside the car, which the first time I heard that, I was like, what is that noise? And then the second time it happened, I'm like, okay, it's definitely my car. And what is happening?
It's singing.
But yeah, definitely a quirky, fun car.
Okay. Yeah, that's fun. We like a little differences. I have heard people comment on the different like safety features that different EVs will make, you know, that noise of backing up or coming by. Mm. And some people complain that they're still too quiet. So do you think you'd like the singing to happen with other cars?
Not all the time. And honestly, probably not in general. Under initial motion is the only time it starts to sing. Once you put in a drive, it starts to sing to you, which was very interesting. But under normal everyday circumstances, either you'd probably tune it out or get annoyed with it potentially. But yeah, that was a fun little city car. I had a very short time with that, and it was better than I thought it was gonna be, but like Kyle alluded to, some interior materials and things like that, not the best. If it had like the fabric fold back roof or something like that, that would be cool. If it had some kind of convertible like function to it, I think that would make it even quirkier and even more interesting in line with what it's going for. Another vehicle that I had was the BMW i5. And this one was interesting. I think it's one of the better, in my personal opinion, one of the better looking BMWs that are out there, at least newer ones. But the chunky steering wheel, not into that. The iDrive 8.5, not, there's so many layers to it. I think BMW needs to put more buttons back into these vehicles because there's so many layers to it. Even with the knob, it's laid out in such a way that you really need to take your eyes off the road to kind of see what you're doing, depending on what you're trying to adjust. And then I had that up in the Canyon, and the steering was pretty numb, I would say. Coming from what, I mean, BMW used to say they were the ultimate driving machine, and I wasn't getting that vibe in the Canyons with the i5 personally.
What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, i5 is just a cruiser now. It's yeah, no longer a big three. It's a small seven.
Yep.
And I like the i5. I think the i5 suffers from too small of a battery and too weak of a charging curve. We did some charging tests. I think, Max, you had that vehicle charging as well. And we were just all, and even looking at the BMW graphs, like that's just not a great charging vehicle, especially when you compare it to a much cheaper Hyundai Ioniq 5, high voltage. Why didn't the Germans go high voltage? That's what I don't understand. Taycan's really the only one. So, and you know, that car pays off with fantastic charging. I think they've woken up and their future stuff's going to be high voltage, big boy charging. But I think Mercedes and BMW, if there's one thing they messed up other than the styling on their electric cars, it's the fact that they just did not make them charge well.
Wah, wah. Speaking of charging, I want to briefly touch on the Tesla layoffs, because we, like I said, we have a whole other podcast, but I do appreciate like everyone's opinion on this. And I want to start with Max, because Max, I do also love hearing your opinions. They're sometimes spicy, and I just like to hear what's going on in your head. But as we know, Tesla has been, people have been experiencing layoffs as employees of Tesla. They've been in lots of different departments. They've been executive level. And also today we saw the laying off of the supercharger team, which is crazy because the Tesla supercharging network is arguably the most reliable EV charging network in North America. What does this mean? Max, what are your first thoughts when you heard this?
I mean, it's big news, no doubt. You know, I'm not like a charging industry expert, but of course, all of us here at Out of Spec are more or less somewhat plugged into it. And so it's a big deal. I will say, though, like I've been one of the people beating the drum that Tesla supercharging isn't perfect for a while now. I don't know if there's a cause and effect here. I don't really think there is, but it's not like the supercharger network is perfect. And to be honest, you know, it is going through a really tough period right now. The superchargers are, one, not high voltage, so they're not adequate for today. Infrastructure needs. They're not getting NEVI funding, potentially. Some ways they're working around it. Tesla's always very good at getting government money, but they're struggling with it because those chargers can't always meet the high voltage needs. And that also means they can't charge modern vehicles like the Hyundai products or Tesla's own Cybertruck. Instead, they have to resort to using 700 amps, which is just insane. And I don't think should be happening on those cables. But there's lots of crazy stuff they're doing. So the actual hardware is kind of dated, to be honest, even though it's very reliable. And the software and the whole network and the whole way it works is beautiful. Obviously, it's the most reliable network in the US, but there have been issues with it. And I don't know if these are related. You know, all the moves that Tesla likes to make are forward thinking, I guess. So maybe this is driven towards a pivot to AI or towards some other aspect of the energy business or what, I don't know. What I do know is a lot of people on Twitter and everything, or even Tesla fans, are kind of confused and like head scratching at this. Like, what's going on? Like I thought this was, you know, one of the best functioning parts of the company. Sure, they have to get V4 superchargers, high voltage on track, but they seem to be doing a great job. Of course, it's also a struggle right now, right? They've got to adapt to all these vehicles where they're opening up their network in the US. It's not like this is unprecedented. People who are outside of America have known this for a while, European viewers, right? It's not like the network can't work with other cars. It's just an adjustment. So lots of change, lots of turbulence happening. Really curious to hear everyone else's thoughts, but this is crazy news. And, you know, it kind of stacks on to a lot of other turbulent news at Tesla. So regardless of your thoughts of the company, like the company's changing, things are happening. It's kind of crazy times over there.
It is, Max, pretty crazy.
I am. This was a shocker, and you know, certainly, I think, okay, Tesla. First of all, just there's so many different angles you can look at this, but let's just look at it from another automaker's perspective, who just signed on with J3400 NACS to gain access to the supercharger network. That would be like, we just put our company reputation on the line partnering with Tesla. And then everyone we were working with, if it's the whole team, that's like every single one of their contacts. Who do they even call?
Have you seen, Kyle? Rivian has been putting ads on Facebook and everywhere of Rivian's charging and Tesla superchargers, like very prominently, right? This is very much like part of the partnership now. I don't know how people at those companies must feel.
So, yeah, I mean, that's got to be confusing. I know a lot of people at these companies that are responsible for the charging partnerships and collaboration. So I'm looking forward to making some phone calls today to just see what they're feeling, what's going on. You know, of course, I've already reached out to a couple people on the supercharger team that I knew that are let go and confirmed let go, to see if they'll come on the podcast and maybe not talk specifically, because there's, of course, a lot of NDAs and things that they can't talk about, but maybe they could talk about the impact from the industry as a whole. Some of them have already made some LinkedIn posts and Twitter posts, which will, of course, hopefully you guys will have watched the podcast. We haven't shot it at the moment, going through all the supercharger layoff situation, but I think it's going to ripple through the rest of the industry. The charging industry is already weaker than it was 3 years ago in terms of investment. You know, we always mentioned we're going to see a lot of consolidation in the charging industry. There were a lot of Chinese companies, a lot of startup companies trying to get the equipment in the ground, get market share, do what they need to do in the US. And of course, like, I felt a lot of that just dry up. I'm seeing consolidation. We've seen Tritium recently go under for the most part. So it's been at charge points not looking great. I don't know. Things are not looking good in the charging world, and that is going to potentially slow down the electric transition if this can't get figured out. The saving grace of all of this was the supercharger network. That was going to be Tesla was going to build out the network. And right now, I think it's safe to assume that while maybe the plan as a whole will not change, it's certainly not going to happen faster by letting 500 people go.
Oh my gosh, no. Yeah, I've been a part of layoffs before in the EV charging industry. And just being in a large company that does lay off a big group, I was in a 40%, you know, they laid off 40% of their workforce. And it mixes things up. Not only does it, of course, affect morale, I don't know what it's like inside Tesla, but also the processes, the operations, the people that you used to talk to internally, the projects that you were on, that gets mixed up inevitably. So thinking about this wide scale network that a whole team was in charge of disappearing, I don't know. I just don't, I really have no idea what's going to happen so next.
What do we think these layoffs? Okay. So here's my viewpoint. They are either a combination of, okay, your superchargers technically don't meet NEVI requirements, even though some states say they do. I'm doing a video on that, by the way. That'll go up after this show goes up on the reviews channel, which is why superchargers should not get NEVI funding because they don't support a full voltage range, even though some read it differently. And like even our Colorado state representatives read it differently. I totally disagree. I think it's not in the spirit of what should be allowed in the voltage ranges. So that'll be a video I'm doing. So that could be one thing. Could also be we have not seen any version 4 superchargers yet, just dispensers. And so what's the holdup on that? I heard that maybe they were just starting to spin up a series production line, but I don't know. That's just rumors. And also the fact that their Cybertruck had a bunch of charging bugs on superchargers. You know, of course, we showed a lot of that, but then also Drew Baglino was commenting. And so certainly Elon and whatever saw a lot of the charging bugs that we had with superchargers, whether we were overheating cables, we were getting faster charging on the Electrify America charging network by not just a bit, but over 70 kilowatts higher charging speed, which is a significant delta between superchargers and third party. And it just felt like, okay, there were also a lot of bugs with the interoperability of other vehicles charging on Magic Docks. My e-Golf won't charge on Magic Dock as an example. Our EV9 charges sometimes, sometimes doesn't.
So you're pointing to these these shortcomings in the supercharger network as perhaps a reason to lay off the entire supercharger team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could just be a situation where Elon's like, everyone goes, we'll feel a pain for a little bit, and we'll bring back the key people and maybe get some new blood in here and take reliability, charging speed, all of these things super seriously. I don't know. I felt like they already had an amazing team and no one could do what they did from a deployment standpoint, an installation standpoint, a software standpoint. To Max's comments earlier, they were just so good at all of these things. So I see that side of maybe those are what has led to the layoffs, or there's something else completely going on and we just don't know.
Yeah. And like we said, we'll talk about this more and more in depth on the dedicated podcast episode, because this obviously strikes some worry into our minds within the industry when we have all this information, but also like the people that I talk to that don't have a ton of information that already have doubts about EVs and EV charging. And then they hear, they might hear news about this, whatever they might know. And I'm getting ready to outfit myself with as much information as possible so I can help people digest this information. And I don't know, take a realistic point of view, but also I tend to try to be optimistic because I want it to work out, but facts are facts.
And I want to add to Kyle's comments here. I don't think, regardless of what reason this may be, how many Cybertrucks are there at this point? Like 800
and 5,000.
Oh, 5,000, sorry, in the thousands. So there's a couple thousand Cybertrucks around, highly obviously influential people driving them, but not that many. I don't think there's that many people driving e-Golfs around. So like, yes, there are these edge cases where the supercharger network has definitely not been great, but I think anyone in the charging industry, and you'd agree, Kyle, would tell you that it has been the best of definitely a bad bunch, especially in the US. It's crazy to me, by the way, I'll just personally speak, the ChargePoint, like this watch that network, obviously it's complicated. they lease out their equipment to a lot of other people, so it's not all their stuff. But I have just seen so many, not only the, let alone the financial issues with that company, their hardware in the wild, see it just collapse. I mean, so many of their both AC units and their DC fast chargers just have poorer and poorer reliability. It's really not great to see.
Yeah, and Max, you're right. It's getting worse by the day, actually. It's not getting better. And so actually, I think we can have the CEO of ChargePoint on the show. He's emailed me. I got to email him back. Or I'll just forward it to Francie and you can email him back. But they want to chat, which is fine. But I think ultimately my user experience with ChargePoint echoes Max. It's like exciting when I get one to work now.
Not great. Not feeling great. What do you think, Andrew?
I don't know. It's interesting because, I mean, the supercharging network, at least in the Tesla world and Tesla news lately, was kind of one of the shining lights. And like Kyle said, as far as these other manufacturers putting their faith and committing to the North American charging standard with Tesla and then fire the team. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens with this. I'm curious. Maybe you guys know more about this than me. I'm curious if this maybe leaves the door open crack for another potential business or manufacturer to come in with a NACS style charging station. I don't know if you guys have any comments on that at all.
They're already out there. I just saw public NACS chargers in LA from XCharge.
Mm-hmm.
Will that help them as far as these layoffs go moving the needle? That
has nothing to do with it, really, I don't think, because it's just charging.
And it's interchangeable, right? There's adapters for both. But
right. The same language.
We've seen other cool charging news, though, recently, like not to be all, dour on this. Rivian's unveiling that they're going to open up their network, which is, to be honest, much smaller than the superchargers.
Stations.
Yeah. But, promising new hardware there, developments. And then a lot of people are speculating on LinkedIn and X. All this talent floating around now that Tesla laid off this team, where will they go? I don't know, to be honest. Like, the whole EV environment is not exactly cash flush right now. So
That's the thing. You're right.
Who has the capital to actually
hire these people?
I don't know. Yeah. They're brilliant people. I hope they'll be fine. I'm sure they will, but I don't know.
Also, like, where do they want to go? Because, like, there was Tesla, which was kind of like, oh, the epitome of public charging. And then there's, EVgo, Electrify America, ChargePoint.
I wouldn't want to work for any of those companies.
If the numbers are right, they're right. But I don't know who has the capital to back it up.
Yeah.
Who has the capital? Who has, like, a lot of these people are very, that I know on the supercharging team, are like hardcore results driven. They like want to work for a company that lets them go full send, smoke the competition, and not even be close. There is not a second place here. It is Tesla Supercharger and everyone else.
Other companies like Rivian, even Lucid, I think share a lot of that like philosophy from the engineering, the tech team. It's just those companies, I don't think responsibly should do that because they don't have the money. They need to conserve capital. Regardless of what we may dream about, they don't have the money for that.
I'm already like seeing the comment now about like, what about IONNA IONNA, that network that was the consortium of all those automakers, but it's its own entity building out a North American EV charging network. But they exist as an entity, but they don't have chargers or anything.
It's a JPEG right now. That's what that company is.
I mean, okay, so we also know a lot of people at IONNA. I know Seth now and have spoken to him. And so, like, great, but they are like, if they did their hiring rounds now, that would be great. But I'd be curious if we should do this in the supercharger episode. Like, what is their job posting versus when they first launched? Have they filled those positions? And are they going to backfill now? Are they going to be like, oh, actually, you know what? This dude from Tesla is now free. We want to work with him and whoever originally had the job. Like, either way, this is going to send waves deep through the charging industry. And it's going to be a disaster, I think.
We will watch it happen live again.
If anyone wants to help us with charging coverage, give me a call.
Yeah, for sure.
Do not pay as well as Tesla, I'm sure.
No, but if you want to be a part of the Out of Spec team, shoot your shot. Why not? Okay, thank you, Max, Kyle, and Andrew for coming on to this April 2024 wrap-up of the team. Of course, thanks, Jordan, for hopping on. We didn't get to see Dave or Colton, but they definitely have been busy doing their stuff. So make sure to check out their channels, Out of Spec Detailing and Out of Spec Dave.
And Jerome was doing, where didn't he
and
join?
And Jerome, which is Out of Spec Renew. And Jerome's everywhere. He's always moving
he's
around.
In the mess right now.
More than me.
He does. He's on the roll for real. So check those out as well. And let us know what questions you have for us. Anything that you're interested to see in May. And make sure to check out all the things that we mentioned if you haven't seen it already from our work in April. Thank you so much for tuning in with us today for another episode of the Out of Spec Podcast. We will catch you soon. Have a great rest of your day. Bye, y'all.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.